Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Sons of Texas series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Tony Nam, Casey Platt, Joe Brack, Eric Messner, Joseph Thornhill, Drew Copas, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Daniel Stevens, Thomas Keegan, Michael John Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Yasmin Toison, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Nathaniel Perry, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Bobby Aselford, M.B. Van Dorn, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Tim Getman, Barbara Pinellini, and Mort Shelby. Sons of Texas Number 3, The Rebels, Part 2. Dawn's approach gave a rosy color to the water where the Brazos flowed into the Gulf. The marksman's aims improved on both sides. Around him, James could now see several dead men among the Texans, and many more wounded. He could see a couple of Mexicans lying across the garrison wall, shot dead as they had raised up to fire. Some soldiers, fearing the Texans' deadly aim, raised rifles over the wall and fired blindly, keeping their heads down. Even this did not protect them from harm. The rifle exploded as a Texan bullet struck it.
This is what a battle is all about. It's men dead or shot to pieces and spilling blood and guts all over the ground.
I didn't ask you to come.
Neither one of us has got any business here. I hope you know that now.
Sly!
In his anxiety, James raised up too far and felt the wind as another bullet sang by his head. He dropped back down and turned Shipman over. Blood spilled from a hole in Shipman's homespun shirt, high in the shoulder.
Damn you. Sly, don't you die on me. I got you into this. For God's sakes, give me a chance to get you out of it.
James tore a sleeve from his own shirt and shoved it tightly against the wound, trying to staunch the blood. He knew it was useless to call for help. Others needed help as much or worse, but had not received it. So long as the fire continued hot from the rim of that fortress, there was little help for anybody. But as the day broke, the fire from the fortress became desultory, finally sputtering and dying. Each time soldiers had tried to man the artillery pieces, sharpshooters from the Texan ranks had cut them down. The riflemen had done far more damage than the schooner Brazoria, its cannons loaded with scrap iron and pieces of chain in lieu of proper cannonballs. Dark smoke curled and did a devil's dance over a scene of despair and ruin. In due course, a white flag was raised over the garrison wall. The Texans were silent in contemplation of the carnage wrought around and among them. James had managed to stop the bleeding of Shipman's wound. Sly was semi-conscious, fighting to hold back the darkness that threatened to overtake him.
Hold fast, Sly. Maybe we'll have help here directly.
Help did come, after a while. Someone brought a jug of Mexican whiskey for Shipman to drink, to deaden the pain. James watched a portly, black-clad man work on the other men, as badly wounded or worse than Shipman. After a while, he came over to James.
You a doctor?
I'm a minister.
James noticed for the first time that he wore a leather patch over one eye.
My first concern is for healing lost souls, but from time to time I have been called upon to help heal wounded bodies. Let me see what the trouble is here.
The man tore Shipman's shirt open.
Oh, if that bullet had gone an inch or so farther to the inside, the best I could do now would be to pray for the young gentleman's soul. But let us see if we may give the Lord some help here. Now, son, you may want to take another swig or two of that whiskey. Now, ordinarily, I do not hold with spirituous liquors, and this smells particularly vile, but there are times when it has its uses. So drink all you can, young gentleman. The less you know about what I do here, the better for you. I shall return.
The minister went on to treat other wounded while Shipman drank himself into a stupor. When he came back, he heated the blade of a long, thin knife over an open fire and probed the wound, seeking the bullet. After a time, Shipman fell unconscious. James decided the minister would do better to confine his doctrine to horses. With just one eye, he probably couldn't see what he was doing anyway. But after a minute that seemed an hour, the minister brought out the lead ball that had done the damage. He poured into the wound the whiskey that Shipman had not already drunk.
He has a good chance now that the bullet's out of him. That is, if he does not take blood poisoning, but he's going to be a long time getting back to the man he used to be. He will need the Lord's blessing and a lot of care. I shall seek the blessing, but the care will be up to you and his family.
He's got no family that I know of.
Then the responsibility falls upon your shoulders, young gentleman.
You don't know how much I'm responsible.
The minister looked at the long crease across James's arm. The blood had long since congealed and dried.
It would appear you could use a little attention yourself.
I've had Yellow Jackets sting me worse than this. Go see after them that needs you, preacher. And thanks.
The minister moved away to do his work upon other wounded. James did not go into the fortress. He did not want to leave Shipman that long. He took it for granted that the scene inside was as terrible as the one outside, for several who went to see came back white-faced and shaken. The Mexican commander, Ugarteguía, surrendered his sword to Austin and Brown. A night of fierce hostilities seemed to have burned away most of the enmity on both sides. The surrender was cordial enough. The Mexicans were allowed to retain their sidearms and personal property upon Ugarteguía's promise that they would leave Texas. They were to take their wounded with them, but they would bury their dead here. The schooner Brazoria moved past the garrison, its sails set for Anahuac, though some of its rigging had been shot away. James didn't know for certain how many had died on the Texan side. Some said seven, some said more. He found that he didn't really care to know. He wanted only to put this place behind him and forget. But he knew he never would. Even if he tried, he would have Sly Shipman to remind him. Concerned settlers brought wagons after a time, hauling part of the wounded to a farm some distance from the scene of the battle. Others, who didn't live far away, were carried to their homes. It was out of the question for James to take Shipman back to Louisiana in his condition. He helped carry his partner and a couple of others into a cabin owned by a generous widower who offered the use of his farm home for however long it took the men to be able to travel farther. James was not sure the first night that Shipman was going to make it. After being white and cold in the beginning, he began to run a fever that had him ranting out of his head. James wiped sweat from Shipman's face and forehead with a cool, damp cloth and alternated between cursing himself and praying for divine intervention. The fever began to subside the second day, and Shipman came to consciousness off and on. Each time he did, James had to explain to him where he was and what he was doing there. Toward sundown of the second day, the fever was mostly gone, and Shipman was fully awake. He stared at James, but said nothing. James looked for blame in his eyes, but didn't see it.
I wish you'd say it and get it over with. You told me so.
I ain't saying nothing. I ain't figured on saying nothing.
You got a right to. If it hadn't been for me, you wouldn't be lying here.
I've been shot before. It ain't like they'd done something brand new. What are you going to do about our mules?
Who cares about mules at a time like this?
I do. I ain't going to lay here forever.
I'll go fetch them when I see you're out of trouble.
I ain't been out of trouble since I was 6 years old. I want you to go see about them mules. Tell the farmer who's keeping them that we ain't dead and we'll be after them by and by.
James decided that Shipman wouldn't rest until that chore was taken care of. The next morning, following Shipman's directions, he set out on Walker to find the farm where the mules had been left for safekeeping. Along the way, he came upon half a dozen horsemen riding from the direction of the fortress at Velasco. He recognized them as veterans of the battle and held up until they reached him.
Any news from Anahuac? Did the schooner make it down there all right?
Yes.
This was the tall man who had led James to Velasco in the first place.
Turned out it wasn't needed. Colonel De Las Piedras had already gone to Liberty and then up to Anahuac and turned Bradburn out of office. He agreed to right the wrongs that Bradburn visited upon us.
And Travis is free?
Travis and all the others Bradburn had imprisoned.
When did all this happen?
Before the Battle of Velasco. We just didn't know. Ugar de Chia didn't know.
James slumped in the saddle, thinking of shipmen, thinking of all those dead, all those wounded.
So the battle was for nothing.
It wasn't a total loss. We got to shoot the hell out of some Mexicans.
Got the hell shot out of us, too.
Life doesn't give us anything free.
The man lifted one hand as a way of saying goodbye and proceeded upon his way, the other men following in silence. James watched them for several minutes, his stomach roiling in frustration and anger and regret. He had been so sure that Michael would have gone into that battle. Now he began to wonder. James was reluctant to leave Shipman, but his partner was adamant, even angry, when James seemed to try to stall the mission. Following Shipman's directions, he found a farm where the mules had been left, rewarded the farmer with a jug of good Kentucky squeezins, and then proceeded to peddle most of the assorted goods out around the area for a small but welcome profit. Though the Mexican soldiers had prevented him from working his farm, he had not been idle. He had little money deposited with Baptiste Villaray in Natchitoches, probably more than he could have hoped to make out of 1 year's crops in Austin's colony. Nevertheless, it scratched in his craw that they had robbed him of that chance. It was the end of June now, and much too late to start a crop, even if he were to return to the farm. Memories of his aborted attempt to settle on the Colorado set him to thinking. From here, it was not really very far. On horseback, he could make it maybe 3 days without pressing Walker too much. 4 or 5 if he took it slow, for shipment's sake. It was considerably farther back to Louisiana, and there would be no one to see after shipment at their cabin except James. For help, he would have to carry the wounded man all the way to Natchitoches, and a trip of that length could kill him. Among the Lewis family, shipment would receive the care he needed. He didn't know what Annie's reaction might be. She had seemed to have mixed feelings about Shipman the last time, but James never had paid much attention to what Annie said. By the time he returned to the farm where Shipman lay recuperating, James had made up his mind. As soon as his partner appeared fit to ride, they would go to the Colorado. He had to circle around San Felipe, of course. That Mexican officer had a long memory from what Annie's letters had said. And James might have to sleep in the woods instead of in one of the Lewis cabins, but that was all right. He'd been spending more nights under the stars than under a roof anyway. At this time of year, it was no hardship. James found a visitor at the farm, the one-eyed minister. Round of belly and gray of hair, the man came out to the horse pen to greet James as he rode in, leading the string of mules.
Well, young gentlemen, your packs appear to be about empty. Commerce must be thriving.
James doubted the minister would approve if he knew that some of those trade goods were whiskey.
I done all right. How's Sly?
Mr. Shipman is doing quite well. Praise the Lord. Considering how near he came to confronting his maker and accounting for all his past transgressions.
What do you know about his transgressions?
James wondered if Shipman had been talking too much. A man in their profession could not afford to be overly free with conversation, at least about their business.
Fear not. I have no truck with the authorities. I'm contraband here myself, you might say. As a Protestant servant of the Lord, I'm in Texas in violation of Mexican law. It forbids all but Catholics, as you must know.
James was not a churchgoer particularly, so that restriction had not caused him any personal inconvenience. He was aware of it, though.
I'll make a pact with you, preacher. I won't talk to the law about you, and you don't talk about us.
A fair trade, sir. I am the Reverend Fairweather.
Fairweather. The name struck a chord, and James searched his memory. It seemed he'd heard Andrew and Michael speak of a minister by that name, a one-eyed preacher.
I'm James Lewis.
The man studied James with that one critical eye.
Yes, yes, I can see the favor now that I look for it. You would have two brothers by the names of Michael and Andrew.
You know them, Ben?
Our trails have crossed more than once. The first time I fear I was about the devil's work, but the Lord did smite me hip and thigh and showed me the error of my ways. And we have since had better relations, your brothers and I. But they are farming out on the Colorado River. What are you doing in this part of the country, running contraband past the noses of the authorities?
I had a mite of trouble with the convict soldiers. I had to leave.
Oh, unfortunate. That's a good land where your brothers are. You should be there raising crops to feed the hungry, with a family to share the bounty of your labors.
I'm going back.
And what of the soldiers?
Hell with the soldiers. I beg your pardon, preacher.
There has been but one of us who was perfect, and he lived a long way from Texas. Let me feed your animals while you see about your friend. I believe you will find him better than you left him.
Shipman was pale and drawn and had dark circles under his eyes, but those eyes were livelier than before. He assumed the worst before James had a chance to say more than hello.
I suppose you lost money for us on our merchandise?
As a matter of fact, I did pretty good. There ain't much cash in this colony, but I got a little of what there is. I thought it was better than trading for goods because we're not apt to go back to Natchitoches for a while.
Why not? I'm ready to travel.
The hell you are. I'd be burying you before we got halfway to the Sabine. But maybe in a few days you'll be up to making a shorter trip. I'm taking you to my family.
That sister of yours, she may not take kindly to me.
She probably won't. She's got a temper like a cat that's had its tail stepped on. So we won't ask her. We'll just show up.
I can't abide bad temper in an ugly woman. But I can stand it if she's good-looking enough. And your sister's good-looking enough.
James waited 3 more days before undertaking the trip, giving Shipman time to gain strength. He disliked imposing on the farmer's patience and hospitality. When Fairweather departed to see after other souls, James gave the farmer 2 jugs of Kentucky whiskey, which he had retained for that purpose from the supply of trade goods. The jovial farmer seemed to feel that this was excessive payment and insisted upon sharing at least one of the jugs with James and Shipman.
Whoa there.
Sly, the horse ain't moving.
Maybe the saddle's loose.
Shipman was still carrying a glow when James helped him up on his horse and they set out westward. He took more time than necessary, carefully watching for sign of soldiers, but seeing none. He was considering spending a night at the farm of Marcus Caldwell, the rusty-haired settler who had befriended him on his flight toward the Sabine. The only thing which gave him pause was that he still remembered his run-in with Caldwell's red-headed daughter, Libby. Unlike Shipman, James had little patience with bad temper in any woman, no matter what she looked like. He had to hunt a little before he found a place, but he recognized the long, rambling log house and the well-tended, rail-fenced field where corn waved green in the wind. He found Farmer Caldwell and his sons out hoeing their corn, as befitted good farmers. James looked back at Shipman. His partner looked tired and pale. They would be spending the night all right. Maybe 2 nights. The farmer remembered him.
I knew no brother of Andrew's and Michael's could be kept out of Texas unless they buried him. Welcome back to God's paradise.
Caldwell's attention went then to Shipman.
What's this, a man hurt?
We got ourselves caught up in a scrap over at Velasco. Sly Shipman there, he taken a bullet.
We heard about that fight. Was it as bitter as the stories make it out?
It was bad enough. I was sure wishing I was someplace else after the shooting started. It wasn't what I thought it would be.
I've been in a couple of bad scrapes myself in my wilder days. I decided being a farmer was better than being a fighter. Maybe you're getting the same notion?
It's come to me several times. Didn't seem like there was much else we could do, though. Bradburn had Travis and some others in jail and was going to see to it that they were shot. We couldn't just stand by and let them get away with such as that.
I suppose not. I've never met Travis myself, but I've heard of him. Seems like from what folks say that he hunts up trouble if it doesn't hunt for him. He ought to have left Brad Bird alone.
Maybe so. But he didn't, and we set out to turn him loose. I just didn't figure on it being so mean. I figured they'd see we meant business and back away. People kept saying the Mexicans wouldn't fight.
Folks say a lot of things. Can't believe them all. Yes, the Mexicans will fight. How else do you think they won their freedom from Spain?
Oddly, James had never thought about it in that light.
I wish I'd talked to you before I went.
While we're talking now, your friend is sitting there suffering on that horse. Let's get him on up to the house.
Mrs. Caldwell had seen them coming. She stood waiting on the porch, wadding a cotton apron in her hands.
Land's sake, Libby, it looks like we got a hurt man on our hands.
He's been wounded, ma'am.
James felt Libby's blue eyes examining him coolly. She had gotten no friendlier since his last visit.
Can't say I'm surprised. Look who he's riding with.
James hoped one night here would rest Shipman enough to continue the trip.
If you got a place for him, ma'am.
Certainly. We'll make a place.
You still running from the same soldiers? Or maybe a new bunch now?
You don't see me running, do you?
I'll bet we would if some soldiers were to come riding over that hill yonder.
James could not deny that, but he tried not to dignify it with an answer.
I sure don't want to be any trouble to you, ma'am. But Sly Shipman here, he got hurt on account of me.
I sure can't say there's anything surprising about that.
Mrs. Caldwell led the way to a room at the end of the log building. James knew by the look of it that her son slept there.
Libby, you go fetch some hot water and clean cloth. I'll fix this poor young man's dressing. Looks like it hasn't been changed in a day or two.
We've been moving, ma'am.
Libby brought the water and cloth.
Thank you, Libby. Now you go on and get. There's plenty to be done in the kitchen.
A girl her age had no business seeing a young man's body naked from the waist up. It wouldn't be seemly. James was relieved. A little of the girl's barbed comment was enough to serve him from now to Christmas. He and Caldwell removed Chipman's badly abused cotton shirt and then the bandages that the Reverend Fairweather had put on. James shook involuntarily at the sight of the wound. It still looked angry and dark, though it had improved from the last time he had seen it.
The preacher was afraid he might get blood poison.
Well, since he hasn't already, it's not likely he will. But you'll need to keep the wrapping clean.
Martha set about cleaning and rebandaging the wound.
Now, young man, we'll get a good supper into you after a bit, and you'll look and feel a lot better.
I feel better already. If ever a time comes, I can do you a favor. James, we got any of our goods left?
Nothing but a jug or two of Kentucky whiskey that I kept in case something comes up.
It's come up. Fetch it.
James gave San Felipe a wide berth, for the capital of the colony was almost certain to be watched over by at least a few soldiers at any given time. The trip required a day or two more than he expected. He had not taken into full account that the last time he had ridden some of the same route, he'd been moving a lot faster. Moreover, Marcus Caldwell had talked them into staying over an extra day at his place to let Shipman rest a bit longer. James suspected the farmer simply enjoyed company and hated to see them leave. He began to see the familiar landmarks that told him he was nearly home. He crossed over the Colorado to its south side sooner than usual, not wanting to run into any of the Blackwood family. They would call the soldiers down upon him out of pure spite. At last, he saw a small figure sitting on a tall horse, pushing a few cattle westward.
Mordecai! Mordecai!
The rider turned to look, then pulled his horse around and pushed it into a lope. James recognized young Mordecai, Michael's son. As the boy reined up beside him, James leaned back in the saddle to take the youngster's measure.
I swear, Mordecai, you've grown half a foot since last I seen you.
I thought you might be my papa coming home. From a distance, you look sort of like him.
Michael? Where's he at?
We don't rightly know. A bunch of men came by here a while back looking for volunteers to go to Anahuac and set things straight. You know my papa. He went.
Mordecai gave Shipman a moment's curiosity.
Sly Shipman, this is my nephew Mordecai. A ways from home, ain't you?
I come to gather up my papa's cattle that strayed down the river. Things can happen to them when they get too far from home. Finis Blackwood can't tell our cows from his own.
A common failing in that family. We'll help you drive the cattle.
Mr. Shipman don't look like he feels too good. Maybe I'll head best go on.
You're right. I'd best get Sly on down to Andrew's house, where Annie and Petra can take care of him.
Aunt Annie ain't living with Uncle Andrew and Aunt Petra no more.
Did Petra run her off?
That would not have surprised him, given Annie's penchant for running things.
No, Aunt Annie decided she was a burden, and she wanted to live in a house of her own. So we took those logs you had piled up, added some more to them, and we built her a house up there on your place.
My place? You mean still mine?
Ain't nobody come and taken it away. I think Aunt Annie would shoot anybody that tried.
Them Mexican soldiers, they been hunting me?
Every so often. They poke around a little but leave when they can't find you. They don't hurt anybody. You come to stay, Uncle James?
If the soldiers don't catch me.
James rode on, circling far enough around the cows to avoid turning them back. The first cabin was Michael's. He saw the slight figure of Marie Lewis standing on a dog run, shading her eyes with her hands. She ran a little way out into the open, then stopped, slumping a little. James sensed that she, like Mordecai, had thought at first he was Michael. James got down from the bay horse and hugged his sister-in-law.
I'm sorry, Marie.
Sorry for what?
Sorry I'm not Michael. I saw Mordecai back yonder a ways. He told me. But I reckon Michael'll be along pretty soon. All the trouble appears to be over.
Marie's gaze went to Sly Shipman, and James had to explain about the fight at Velasco. He left out most of the details because they would only intensify her concern for her missing husband.
It hadn't been but a little while since we left your daddy over in Nakatosh. Sly and me, we've been partnering with him a right smart.
I know. It's a wonder you all haven't been put in jail.
By the time James and Shipman had answered her many questions about their parents and the family she hadn't seen in years, the sparkle had returned to Marie's dark eyes, pushing a worry aside. James enjoyed listening to the French accent he had once thought odd. After the time he'd spent in Louisiana, it sounded natural. But before too long, the pair found themselves riding away.
She's too pretty to be the daughter of old Baptiste. Must take after her mother's side of the family.
I wish he wouldn't do that.
Who do what?
Michael, go off and leave her that away. Andrew says he gets an itchy foot every so often. Can't help himself. Says he's like her daddy used to be. Always looking for a reason to ride over the hill and see what's out yonder.
If it hadn't been for him and his restless nature, there wouldn't none of you Lewises be in Texas.
I reckon you're right. But that's a fine little woman back there. I wish Michael wouldn't go up and leave her.
Annie Lewis watched in disbelief as Isaac Blackwood pulled up in back of the cabin, driving two mules hitched to a wagon loaded with firewood. A small boy sat on the seat beside Isaac, his eyes wide and curious as Annie walked out to meet them, her skirt catching in the wind and whipping a little. Isaac doffed his old hat. He was clean-shaven as the last time. Gone was the dark beard he used to wear.
Mr. Blackwood, Isaac, what in the world brings you here with that wagon?
Howdy, Miss Annie. Well, ma'am, me and the boy here, we've been gathering up wood for next winter. It come to me that you don't have a man of your own to fetch for you. There's plenty of dead timber out yonder, and it's easy gathering. It didn't take us no time, hardly.
Annie stepped closer to the wagon. She hadn't seen the boy before. She judged him to be 5 or 6 years old. She thought she could see a resemblance, but she hadn't heard of Isaac ever being married.
Your son?
Well, he belongs to Finnis, but I reckon I've done the biggest part of his raising.
Annie suspected that was no exaggeration. She'd not seen much of the other two Blackwood brothers, Finnis and Luke, but she had heard enough from Michael and Andrew to know their coming to Texas had been an improvement for Tennessee. Finnis couldn't be much of a father for the boy, any more than old Cyrus Blackwood back home had been for his own sizable brood.
I appreciate the gesture, Mr. Blackwood, but it wasn't necessary. My brothers have promised to lay in a supply for me once they get their fields worked.
If it comes a hard winter, you'll need all the wood you can get. I'll be unloading it for you.
Isaac stepped down from the wagon, then took the boy in his arms and set him on the ground, motioning for him to stand back out of harm's way. A small wood pile was already there, thanks to Andrew and to Michael's oldest, Mordecai. The mules stood patiently, switching tails and flipping their ears against the summer flies that harassed them. Annie vacillated between gratitude and embarrassment as she watched Isaac work. She did appreciate the gesture, but she sensed that Isaac had a reason. She had not been oblivious to the way he looked at her whenever he came around. That he admired her, that he wanted her, she had no doubt. She was both flattered and troubled. Troubled because she couldn't return the feeling. He seemed in all ways a gentleman in her presence, never pushing himself, never saying or doing anything that might give offense. Had he been someone other than a Blackwood, she might have been able to respond. But she remembered too well the reputation that family had back in Tennessee, and knew the reputation Isaac's brothers had here. It had been Isaac's father, Cyrus, who had betrayed Annie's father to the Spanish soldiers, resulting in his being murdered here in Texas a long time ago. That, if nothing else, would always stand between them.
What's the boy's name?
Cyrus.
Give a dog a bad name. But this was not a dog. This was a boy. An innocent boy who had no reason to answer for something done a dozen years before his birth.
I cook up something sweet for my nephews when they come over to see me. I'll bet I can find you something good in the kitchen if you'll come with me.
The boy looked back to Isaac, asking him silently, and Isaac nodded, smiling.
Well, be sure now and tell the lady thank you.
Cyrus was quiet, but his eyes never rested. Annie found him some cookies she had made for Mordecai and Edward, Frank's boy, when they had come over to help weed the cornfield and chop a supply of wood for the cooking. She had used honey, which was relatively plentiful, instead of sugar, which was not. While he munched the cookies, Cyrus walked about the cabin, looking at everything with a lively curiosity, even poking into the wooden trunk in which Annie had brought her few treasures from Tennessee. He took particular interest in a set of drawings she had made of the family back home, so she could have them for remembrance. Annie got him a slate she had used in school.
Can you draw?
He lay on his stomach on the floor and went to work. The drawing was crude, but she could tell it was supposed to be a horse, or perhaps a mule.
That's good. You could learn to be an artist.
Annie realized, sadly, however, that as Finnis's son, following in his father's footsteps, he was unlikely to ever be anything but another Blackwood. Lazy, trifling, perhaps even a little dangerous. What a waste that would be. After a while, she stepped out onto the dog run and saw that Isaac had finished. He had stacked the timber as neatly as was practical.
Come on in. I've made you some coffee.
She didn't often make coffee. It was too expensive for every day, so she had gotten into the habit of saving it only for company. It was a small price to pay for a wagon load of firewood. She watched him dust himself off and wash his hands in a small basin, using brown soap she had made from tallow and ashes and such.
You shouldn't have gone to so much trouble, Mr. Blackwood. Isaac.
Annie found his face not unpleasant when he smiled, and he smiled now.
It wasn't no trouble at all, Miss Annie. And I've told you before, I'm just plain Isaac, not Mr. Blackwood.
If you'll call me Annie, not Miss Annie.
Annie led him into the kitchen, where the boy Cyrus was still on his stomach sketching a cow that had horns as long as its body. Isaac stopped to look at the slate with some surprise.
Well, I swear, Cyrus, I didn't know you could do that.
You don't know what all boy can do until you give him a chance. I think Cyrus could be an apt pupil for somebody who wants to teach him the right way.
I wish. I just wish. That coffee sure smells good.
The mule Annie had in the front yard was not as reliable as a good guard dog, but he usually only piped up when someone was approaching the cabin.
I hope it's not soldiers again.
Annie pushed her chair back from the table and went reluctantly to the door that led out onto the dog run.
Annie?
Annie stopped at the edge of the dog run, not quite believing what she saw.
James? James, that's not you! It is you! Where'd you come from?
From hell, I guess you could say. Mind if I get down?
You can do what you want to. It's your place.
Annie rushed to embrace him as he dismounted from the bay horse.
I was half afraid you'd take a club to me.
Tomorrow, maybe. Right now, I'm just too glad to see you.
You don't know where I've been or what I've been up to.
You do some fool things at times, but you're still my brother. Who's that with you?
The other rider had moved forward. James helped him to the ground.
Oh, you remember Sly Shipman? He's been wounded.
Annie felt a quick sympathy, but she also remembered the last time she had seen Shipman, his casual attitude toward women, and his running away and leaving them to the mercies of Sergeant Diaz.
I suppose he's done some fool thing, too.
It was me that done the fool thing. Sly got shot trying to pull me out of it. I was hoping you'd see your way clear to help take care of him till he's healed up.
That put a different light on the situation.
Bring him, then.
Annie turned and led the way to a bedroom across the dog run from the kitchen. When they had built the cabin, they had divided that half of it into two rooms, so Annie would have her privacy.
This is your room, anyway. The boys have been sleeping in it when they come over to help me.
Shipman could walk on his own, but James gave him support anyway.
His bandage needs changing. If you'll fix me some hot water, I'll do it.
No, I can do it.
Annie didn't like the faded look in Sly Shipman's eyes. She didn't know how long he and James had been traveling, but it was plain that he was exhausted.
You said he tried to pull you out of some fool stunt. What were you up to?
James explained to her about the battle at Velasco. She had heard there had been a battle, but she knew no details. She had feared Michael might have been there. She had not once considered that James might be mixed up in it.
Did you see or hear anything of Michael?
He wasn't there, or I'd have seen him. Me and Sly never did get to Anahuac.
A startled look came over James's stubbled face. Annie turned and saw Isaac standing in the doorway.
You all need some help here?
Isaac Blackwood.
The man looked different with his beard gone, his hair cut shorter than before. James turned to Annie, his eyes asking.
Isaac brought me a wagon load of firewood.
James was in Isaac's debt for warning him once that the soldiers were coming. Still, an old family enmity was not easily put aside.
Much obliged, Isaac. But I reckon we can handle this all right.
Isaac seemed to accept James's distrust without resentment.
Well, it looks like you folks got a lot to talk about. So me and the boy will be moving on. I need to pick up a load of wood for our cabin before it gets dark. I enjoyed the coffee, Annie. And I do appreciate your interest in the boy.
Annie walked out onto the dog run as Isaac brought the boy from the kitchen. She extended her hand, and the boy took it after a moment's hesitation.
You come back sometime, Cyrus. You can draw on the slate all you want.
The boy smiled, and then turned shyly and trotted toward the wagon.
He seems like a good boy, Isaac.
He could be if... I'm glad your brother got home. I know you've worried.
Isaac was gone in a minute. He and the boy and the wagon. Annie sensed that James stood behind her on the dog run.
How long's this been going on?
How long has what been going on?
I don't know what. Maybe you'd like to tell me.
There's nothing to tell. Nothing's been going on. He's just trying to be nice, that's all.
He's a Blackwood. Blackwoods don't do nothing without they expect to get something more out of it than they put in.
Annie felt heat rising in her cheeks. Any more talk would just lead to an argument, and James had barely even gotten home.
Your friend in yonder needs care. Let's be getting to it.
I just don't like the idea of a Blackwood sniffing around here is all. You can do better than that.
Like your friend Shipman, I suppose?
Sly's got his faults, but he ain't no Blackwood.
Nope, he's just a smuggler.
A merchant. The merchandise is good and legal. It's the law that ain't. And he didn't have to go to Velasco and get all shot up. He did it trying to get me to go away from there. I owe him.
Right. You owe him. I don't.
Annie had had no experience doctoring gunshot wounds. This one, despite several days of healing, still looked bad enough to give her stomach a few uneasy moments. She gritted her teeth and went about cleansing the wound, then putting a fresh dressing over it. Annie stewed over the question a while before she asked it.
Did you really go to Velasco to try to get James away?
That was what I figured on when I went. By the time I got there, though, there wasn't any getting loose. The fight had started real good.
Seems to me you're pretty good at running from fights.
The ones I know I can't win? Damn right. I ain't no fool.
And James is?
He's young and green. He'll grow up if somebody don't kill him first. He's done a right smart of it in the last few days.
Well, I thank you for trying anyway, Mr. Shipman.
My friends call me Sly.
Maybe your friends do, but I'll call you Mr. Shipman.
Oh. It was the next afternoon that young Mordecai came over the hill and up to the cabin as fast as he could make his horse run.
Uncle James! Uncle James! Soldiers coming!
Annie had been in the kitchen, preparing to cook supper on the hearth. She met James on the dog run as he came out of the room he shared with Sly Shipman.
What's this about soldiers?
I saw them myself, Uncle James. There's a big bunch of them. They'll be coming over the hill yonder in a minute or two. You got to take my horse and head for the woods.
But I haven't even been home a full day yet, hardly. How'd they know? Isaac Blackwood.
Isaac wouldn't betray you. He's not that kind.
Finnis would. Maybe Isaac said something to Finnis.
We don't have time to argue about it now. Take Mordecai's horse and ride.
James did, but with reluctance. Annie watched anxiously as he crossed the river and disappeared into the heavy timber on the other side. Not many minutes later, a large body of horsemen appeared on the trail that led to Andrew's house and, farther, to Michael's.
If they ask, you're here to help me with my garden. We haven't seen James in well over a year.
I'm not much good at lying, Aunt Annie.
You've lived in Texas long enough. It's time you learned.
Annie's heart was thumping as she stood at the edge of the dog run, waiting. This was by far the largest body of soldiers she had yet seen pass this way. She saw the officer who so often had come in search of James, but she saw other officers too, men whose uniforms suggested even higher rank. One of them gave an order and the procession halted. She thought there were probably 75 or 80 men, perhaps as many as 100. The officer who had always led the searches seemed to be asking permission of a higher ranking one. He received a nod and dismounted. He came up to the dog run with less swagger than he had shown in the past when he had always been the ranking officer. He had never spoken English, and Annie had learned only limited Spanish from Petra. They had always managed to communicate, however, because she knew what he wanted, and no was the same in both languages.
Hemos escuchado la palabra de que tu hermano ha vuelto a Texas. ¿Es esto cierto?
Annie had to assume he was asking about James, as he always had before, though the words were unintelligible to her.
Su hermano no ha estado aquí en más de un año.
Sly Shipman leaned against the log wall. The officer asked him several sharp questions, and Shipman replied to him in a matter-of-fact manner that neither challenged nor yielded. The officer was obviously not fully satisfied, but he seemed resigned.
Adios.
He walked back to his horse and remounted. The soldiers were soon gone on the trail that led west toward San Antonio de Bar. Mordecai had stood silently beside Annie, his gaze moving from the officer to Shipman as each spoke in turn.
You sure you ain't a Mexican, Mr. Shipman? You sure do talk like one.
A necessity of the business I'm in. The lieutenant says he and the others have been called to Bar. There's a revolution down in Mexico and they've got to go fight it. Said he's not forgetting about James, though, and if he ever gets back up in this country again, he'll be hunting for him.
Then James will be free to stay here, out in the open.
If he wants to. Chances are that officer will never come back.
He looked at you a little suspiciously. How do you explain what you were doing here?
Told him you're my sweetheart. Told him we're fixing to get married.
Why'd you tell him such a lie as that?
Well, the notion just popped into my head. Figured it'd seem logical to him, good-looking woman like you and a good-looking man like me.
Her cheeks warmed even more. She knew she should take offense, but somehow she couldn't.
You're a shameless liar, Mr. Shipman.
I only lie when there's a good reason for it, and I'm generally ashamed of myself afterwards.
I should think you would be.
But I'm not this time. There ain't nothing wrong with the notion, except for the marrying part.
Annie pointed toward the door.
You better go lie back down, Mr. Shipman, before your notions get you in worse trouble than you've already been.
Shipman went, and Annie was glad. Mordecai was not sure how to take it all.
Are you really his sweetheart, Aunt Annie?
If I were looking to be somebody's sweetheart, don't you think I could do a lot better than him?
I don't know. I like him.
James tied Mordecai's horse back out of sight in the timber, then worked his way carefully to the edge where he could hide behind some underbrush and watch the cabin. He was vaguely uneasy, but the soldiers didn't put fear into him as they might have done a year or two earlier. He had dodged enough of them by now that he could take them in stride. They didn't stay long, which surprised him, and they made no move to search the woods, which surprised him more. He was unable to count them, either coming or going, so he couldn't safely assume that none of them had been left behind to watch for him. Prudence would demand that he remain out here until dark, but James had not always been on speaking terms with Prudence. He waited a while, then fetched the horse and crossed back over the river. Mordecai came walking out to meet him.
They're gone, Uncle James.
You sure they didn't leave any spies behind?
I watched them awful close. They're gone. They're on their way to Mexico to fight a revolution. They said they got hornets to worry about and they can't be bothered with gnats.
So I'm a gnat, am I?
That was him said it, not me.
Annie had returned to fixing supper.
Would you like to stay and have supper with us, Mordecai?
I better not, but thanks. Since my papa is not home, I got more chores to do and my ma to watch over.
James held the tall horse and gave Mordecai a boost up into the saddle.
Thanks, Mordecai, for coming to warn me. You're a credit to the Lewis family.
I don't think anyone ever told me that.
I'm telling you. Your old granddaddy would be proud to know you're carrying his name.
James had feared that Annie and Shipman would not get along. Shipman had a tendency to say the wrong thing at the worst possible time, and Annie often said exactly what she thought, no matter the cost. To his surprise, however, they appeared to tolerate each other quite well. Annie changed some of her cooking methods to accommodate Shipman's tastes, and Shipman went out of his way to compliment her on everything, from the way she combed her hair to the way she fixed corn dodgers. Shipman seemed to heal visibly day by day. He'd walk out a little farther each time he ventured from the cabin. With a constant threat of soldiers lifted from him, James began making plans for the farm. His brothers had broken out a small field for him and a garden for Annie. It was too late in the season to plant any more crops this year, other than some vegetables for the cabin. But he stepped off and staked additional acreage, which he would break out next winter and have ready for spring's planting season. He went out into the woods and cut posts and rails, dragging them up to start a fence around the field to keep the cattle from straying into it. There was much to do and not enough daylight hours for all he wanted to accomplish. He kept remembering Marcus Caldwell's farm, with its neatly kept rail fences, its well-tended fields, and its long log house. One afternoon, about a week after his arrival, James cut his hand while sharpening his hoe. The cut was deep enough and bled enough that he decided he'd better go to the cabin and treat it, lest it become infected and put an end to his work for a while. He walked into the room he shared with Shipman, and then stopped in mid-stride. Annie sat on the edge of a cot, leaning over Shipman. He had one arm around her waist, the other resting on her leg, her long cotton skirt pulled up above her knee. The front buttons of her dress were undone, and she had both hands on Shipman's cheeks, pressing his head to her bosom.
Damn!
Annie sat up straight, pulling the top of the dress around to cover herself.
Damn it, James! Can't you make a little noise?
Maybe it's time I did. Maybe I ought to throw you out of this place right now.
James moved toward the cot, his fists clenched.
After we took you in, you go and take advantage of my sister?
Before you go try to throw anybody out, you just listen a minute.
Annie stepped in front of him, buttoning her dress. Her face was flushed. He didn't know if it was from arousal or embarrassment.
He wasn't taking any advantage of me. I had as much to do with it as he did, maybe more.
You mean you wanted that, whatever you were doing?
Yes, and we might not have stopped there either if you hadn't come busting in here like a bull in a china closet. We're grown people. What we choose to do is none of your business.
But you're my sister.
Yes, and 2 years older than you are. So don't you be lecturing me on what I ought or ought not to do.
Then I'll just walk back outside and bleed to death, and you all can go on about what you're doing.
For the first time, Annie noticed his cut hand. She was considerably less sympathetic than he thought she might be.
Well, let's see if we can fix it. You don't need any Mexicans to kill you. You'll fool around and do that for yourself.
Annie had some foul-smelling medicine she had used on Shipman's wound. She applied it to James's hand. It burned like it had come up out of hell or someplace, and she poured it on with a certain amount of grim satisfaction. When the burning subsided, she began wrapping the hand.
How long has this been going on between you and Sly?
There hasn't been nothing going on any more than what you saw. I guess we both know where the stopping place is.
That's easy said till you get there.
What would you know about it?
I didn't spend all my time in Nakatos with mules. You figure on marrying him?
I hadn't figured one way or the other about it.
You might ought to before you let things go much further. You may find out that Sly has notions of his own. They may not be the same as yours.
We'll see.
She finished wrapping his hand. He flexed it. It had not yet had time to get sore, but it would.
I better go get some more work done while I still can. Is it safe for me to leave you two here with one another?
No, it isn't, but you go ahead anyway. If we need you, we'll holler.